From the Twin Ports to the Twin Cities and the rest of the land of sky, blue waters, we are Minnesota Score Radio, your sports ticket. Wally and Eric back for yet another week as we slice and dice the always busy, always cluttered, always topical, and now suddenly upbeat Minnesota sports scene. How about your Twins? Late May, we're past Memorial Day, Wally, and they're tied for first in the AL Central with the Kansas City Royals, best home record in the American League. So many things to get into positive about your Twins.
Yeah, it really has been an unbelievable month of May. I'm guessing, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, this has got to be their best month all around since probably 2010. I think that that's safe to say, and it's probably one of their best Mays ever. I mean, they have really turned it around. You know, April, obviously, we all know about the slow start, the losing six of the first seven, but May has been the month, and of course, it ends this weekend, and we'll see what June brings.
Hopefully not a June swoon.
Yes, because, you know, we've seen it in the past, though. June is really kind of the month that determines which way you're going to go. And, you know, last year, you've told this story several times. You were in Kansas City. The Disastros are in town. They take out the Royals. You know, who'd have thought at that point that the Kansas City Royals would make a run to the World Series? I know you didn't, and not many people did.
No, when I left Kansas City, and that was Memorial Day a year ago, they had gotten swept at home by the Astros, who were on their way to losing 90 in 2014. And, oh, by the way, have 30 wins now and are a bigger surprise than the Minnesota Twins.
Boy, unbelievable.
I mean, the Astros and Twins are on pace to meet in the ALCS if this keeps up. But
what's bad is good, and what's good is bad
exactly.
These days,
right? It's flip-flopped. You know, to your point, when I left Kansas City, there was a lot of grumbling on the sports talk shows and in the newspapers. They fired the hitting coach. And we had Ryan Lefevre on, too, earlier in the year, the voice of the Royals, and he talked about this. They went to Toronto, and they had a bad loss, and then they kind of got lucky, won a couple games, and then it just took off from there, and they morphed into this, you know, winning team that ultimately went to the World Series. So you don't know how it's going to go, good or bad, but I am drinking the Twins Kool-Aid, and I have been for two, 3 weeks. I just believe in what they're doing. Now, it's funny. You look at the big picture. You look at the stats. They don't have anybody close to 300. Their best hitter's, what, about 289, 290?
Yeah, Torrey's in the 280 range. Maurer's in the 277.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they have some power with Plouffe and Dozier and Torrey, but they don't have Nelson Cruz-type power. So they don't have anybody knocking on the door as far as being a home run leader or an RBI leader. Their pitching has been, you know, serviceable, but it's not like they have dominant guys on the mound every night. Now, they do have the best closer in the game in Glenn Perkins. He's perfect. What is he, 18 for 18 now?
I believe so.
So that's a huge thing, and that has helped them a lot. Their middle relief has been good. But I just think that it's funny that all of this has come together, and it spins into a winning team right now. And I think they have the mechanisms in place with Paul Molitor and Torrey Hunter and some others where this can continue. Will they be in the playoffs? I don't know. They'll hit some speed bumps along the way, but I think they're a team that's going to be able to, you know, get through adversity when and if it comes. They already had it at the beginning of the year, and they got through that.
With Santana out right away, and it threw their pitching staff into a conundrum. I mean, they had all kinds of issues at the beginning. It said, and I know everybody around town, including you and I, are saying, here we go again. And, you know, the one thing about the Santana deal is that Terry Ryan might not have to make a deadline deal. He's got one coming in. He's got Ervin Santana coming in here in July. You know, just when everybody's starting to make trades to try and shore things up, he's got a guy that he was willing to spend, what, $50 million on, whatever it is, $48 million on, and he will be part of this rotation. How, I'm not sure. Who's going to be out, we're not sure. It might be an injury, might be somebody who's slacking, might just have to be a difficult decision. Heck, they've got a difficult decision keeping Malone down in the minors. I guess he's just lights out since he's been down there. So it's a good problem to have right now.
Suddenly, it's an abundance of riches. Yeah, Malone, Byron Buxton, and Miguel Sano, they're knocking on the door. You know, they're sending out signals that maybe they're ready to come up to the major league level. And you have Trevor Plouffe, who's doing more than holding his own at third base. He's playing some very good baseball. Aaron Hicks in center field, he covers ground out there. I mean, that guy can go from gap to gap and make plays defensively. He had a big two-run knock in the Wednesday afternoon win over Boston that capped off the sweep. First time they swept the Red Sox since 2006. Look, he's batting ninth. He's hitting around 225. But if he can play the position defensively the way he does, and we've seen that even in his rookie year, Wally. I remember him climbing the wall against the Chicago White Sox and taking a home run away from one of the Sox. And the Hawk even told us after the game, he's going to be a superstar. And well, he hasn't quite become a superstar, but he's definitely become very good in the outfield. Occasionally gives you the timely hit. So, yeah, it's a position of strength suddenly for the Minnesota Twins.
Well, and you talk about Hicks, and I still think that he's got to hit at least 240 if he's going to be their everyday center fielder. I know they'd like him to hit 300 or 270 or 280 or something in there, but I think if you want to keep him as your starting everyday center fielder until Buxton gets here, I think he's got to hit 240. Now, he covers a lot of ground, and I heard a quote from Torrey the other day. I don't know if you heard this. He talked about Hicks on a play that he made that saved a run. It was a diving catch, and he said, that's just as good as an RBI because it would have saved a run. You know, and that's what he told Hicks. And that's Torrey. It's like Manny being Manny. That's Torrey being Torrey. You know, saying the right thing at the right time and being a leader for this club, telling him, hey, I know you're 0 for 4 today, but that play you made, you're 1 for 4 with an RBI. You know, so he does do good things out in the outfield. And how many of those knuckleheads with their cybermetrics or whatever the hell they are telling us that Torrey Hunter can't play right field anymore, where are they these days?
Yeah, they're on Mars. They've disappeared, and I agree. I've never been a big analytics, sabermetrics guy. I know it has, you know, some place in the game, but I've never bought into that. And, you know, Torrey made a great sliding catch on Wednesday to rob Dustin Pedroia.
And the thing is, Eric, is that if you just look at it, you know, computer analysis is fine. It gives you an idea of what a guy can do, but you have to look at the overall picture. He still has a big arm. He gets good jumps on the ball. He throws to the right place at the right time. He does everything that he's supposed to do. That's as a result of playing out there for the last 20 years or whatever it is since he came into pro ball. So there are way too many things that are important to being a good outfielder aside from the ground that you cover. And he still covers a fair amount of ground. And look, if they've got Aaron Hicks in center and soon Byron Buxton, he doesn't need to cover much ground in right center. That's for sure.
They will be his caddies out there in the outfield. I totally agree. I am more of a, what's he do in the trenches? You can analyze it all you want, put it down on paper or put it in a computer or a PowerPoint presentation, whatever you want to do. But it still comes down to what are the intangibles a guy brings to the table? And I know this is a different sport, but I still think it kind of qualifies as an analogy that is accurate. You know, Kevin McHale and the Rockets, the head coach, just eliminated by Golden State. But the GM is Daryl Morey, and he's a big analytics guy. And Charles Barkley's ripped into him for it. He said, there's no place for that in the NBA. And Kevin McHale basically says, look, some of that I agree with, the analytics. But Kevin McHale says, that's not me. What I am is a guy who looks in the eye of an athlete. Does he have the heart? Does he have the passion? Will he go in there and fight when times are tough? That's what I'm looking for. And analytics don't give you that answer. And you and I have known Torrey for a long time. And the intangibles and looking him in the eye and knowing what he brings into the trenches, so to speak. What I'm seeing, Wally, is you got two voices. You've got the kind of even keel, low key voice, never get too worked up, Paul Molitor, who has that Tom Kelly, Bud Grant approach, cerebral.
Yep.
If he's going to rip you, he's going to do it behind closed doors. He won't expose you publicly. And the players buy into that. He's got the credibility, Hall of Famer, been through the ups and the downs. And then the other voice, Torrey.
Torrey played with Molitor for a year or so.
That's why he's the conduit you talked about.
Yes, because he knows what Paul Molitor was as a player. He understands that this guy was a Hall of Famer. Not many of these guys have played with Hall of Famers or played for a Hall of Famer. Well, there aren't many Hall of Famers who have managed.
No.
Managed successfully.
When I was in Clearwater and it was Ryan Sandberg for Philadelphia and Paul Molitor for Minnesota, they said that was the first time ever two Hall of Famers manage against each other. That blew me away.
Yeah, Hall of Famers generally have not had a lot of success managing. Paul Mahler's a different sort, though. He's so cerebral. And for Torrey to understand what Paul Mahler was as a player and to be able to kind of express that to the rest of these young guys who, you know, they know of him. Nobody, they may have seen him when they were young, but they really don't understand it. Some of these guys, you know, they're early 20s. Early 20s means that they were born in 93
or so.
They're
more of the Ken Griffey, Kirby Puckett, you know, that genre.
Even then, I mean.
Yeah, that's getting a long ways away.
Kirby's a long ways away now. Mahler and Kirby would have, if you remember, they never played together because Kirby had the glaucoma the year that Mahler came on board. So they never got to play with each other. They were in the same clubhouse that spring, but, you know, Kirby woke up that one day and couldn't see out of his one eye.
Well, look, you know, again, you and I, we are fortunate enough to sometimes be the eyes for others. And we can get into the clubhouse and get into the dugout and see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and some of it we can share with you and some of it we can't. But, you know, again, I try to observe things when I'm in a locker room. Okay, what's it like in here? What's the mood? And when we were in there Wednesday, now, granted, Twins had won again, five straight. They're tied for first. You know they're going to be in a good mood. That's kind of a given. But there's little things. You know, Aaron Hicks walks by Torrey Hunter, and, you know, they do a little chest bump, and Torrey throws a little verbal barb at him, and then we bring up the Oakland Raiders to Eddie Guardado, who's a big Raider fan, and all of a sudden Torrey starts, you know, jabbing at Guardado, and poof, jumps in, because he hates the Raiders and the Cowboys. He likes the Chargers, you know, and that's the little stuff, the little banter that you can just sense. There's a lot of good feeling in the room right now.
I didn't see any of that.
Oh, you didn't?
Any of that the last 4 years.
No, and it's huge. And again, that's not sabermetrics. You can't put that in a computer.
And honestly, I'm going to go all the way back to 2008 since he left. In 2007 was Torrey's last year. You saw very little. I know Michael Kadire was around, and he was, you know, he was kind of what Torrey was.
Torrey Light.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't. He certainly isn't as outgoing as Torrey, but he handled the media too. You know, that was the other thing. When you and I were in there on Wednesday, you know, granted it was a win, but not everybody wants to, you know, stand and talk to the conglomeration of media. But Torrey stood there and he must have talked to the media for close to a half hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And he took it.
He milled around. And meanwhile, you didn't see others.
No, and that's what Kirby Puckett used to do. Kirby used to stand there and, did you see Joe? I don't even
know.
Is Joe Mauer on this team?
He's a phantom when it comes to that stuff. No, Joe Mauer's more like Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
You just don't see him. And I think Torrey embraces it in most cases. And I think, you know, most members of the media here in the Twin Cities respect Torrey, and he respects them. I think that's the beauty of it. There's a two-way thing here. And if you're fair to Torrey, he's going to be fair to you. And I just think that it's good dynamic they have. And it's filtered down to the young guys. I know we're going to hear from J.R. Graham and Danny Santana later on, and we'll get their thoughts on this whole uprising by the Minnesota Twins. But that's kind of why I'm a believer. I just think that, I am more of a gut feeling hunch kind of guy. You know, go off the emotion, go off the, you know, look into the guy's eye.
Sure.
You see the fire and the passion. You've coached. You know the same thing. We've played, not at that level, but we've played. You know there's certain guys that you can go to war with. And that's, I get the feeling you've got a bunch of guys in a foxhole here who are going to get it done somehow, some way. They may not have a 300 batter. It may not matter. At the end of the day, find a way to get another W, win another series. That's what they're doing right now.
I know it's early. And I know that there's a long ways to go with this year, and things may not turn out the way that they seem right now with Torrey Hunter. But I think that the Twins should have discussions right now about extending him for another year or two. He's on a one-year deal. I know that he's renting a place, and he did not buy. He is renting. You know, Torrey doesn't know what's going to happen next year. He may decide to retire. But I think the Twins should step up now.
I agree. Again, he's their best hitter right now, along with Plouffe and Dozier. I would say he's in that.
He might be their best player.
He might be. I would want to lock him up again. And beyond that, I want him in this organization forever. I don't want to ever lose him again. He's so valuable to, you know, the teammates, the coaches, the employees, the fans, the media, a conduit, like you said. That's a good word. I just wouldn't lose him again. I would never take that chance. Torrey, what do you want to do here? We'll make a spot for you. And I know he's floated out the idea of maybe being a GM, assistant GM, analyst on TV, radio, yep, whatever. There's a lot of things you can work into the equation, and that's what I'd be working on too. But I think, you know, first and foremost, you're trying to win games now. But you're right. Don't let it get to a point where he walks away again, because the fans like the guy. A lot of Hunter jerseys in the stands at Target Field. He made that catch the other day, and you know that sliding grab, and you know he got a loud ovation.
Well, here's the thing, and we do need to take a break. His productivity is not going to go down that drastically from this year to next. You can make the argument that it's going to go down eventually here, and it will. But I don't think you're going to see a huge drop-off from this year to next year. So get him signed up for next year and maybe an option year after that. Maybe it's a club option. Maybe it's a player option. I don't know what it would be. But I would get him. I'd get it taken care of now, because I know he said he's not going to leave here. This is going to be his final stop, but he's renting. And that's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. Let him buy a house. Put the roots down one more time in the Twin Cities, at least in the summer. Exactly. I know he likes a place in Dallas.
He's got quite a
pad down there Sanders' neighborhood and Randy White.
I think that he would be here, he'd be willing to be here April to September.
Yeah. He's a Cowboy October guy. He loves those Cowboys.
All right, we need to take a break, but a reminder, visit our website. It's minnesotascore.com, home to the Minnesota Score magazine. Subscribe right online, just $19.95 for 1 year of the Minnesota Score.
All right, coming up, we're going to hear from Rocky. Is lined up Santana, not Johan, not Irvin, Danny Santana, and also JR, not Richard, not Ewing, JR Graham out of that bullpen. Minnesota Score Radio, your Torrey ticket.
Back to Minnesota Score Radio with Wally Langfellow and Eric Nelson on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
And we're back, Minnesota Score Radio, your Twins ticket. The Twins are sailing along. Best home record in the American League. One of the top teams in the AL overall. Joining us now, J.R. Graham, a middle reliever. And J.R., thanks for your time. And boy, it's hard to put your finger on the collective success of this ball club. A lot of things have gone right, but it just seems to be trending up.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to be a part of this team and to see, you know, where we were at the beginning of the year, but there was never any panic, and that veteran leadership that we have in this clubhouse has really kind of steered us along. And then, you know, once things started rolling, everyone was hopping on that wagon and we were going.
You came into the Braves organization. You've been in this organization now for a short time. What were your impressions when you first came into the Minnesota Twins organization?
It was a relaxed focus around here. You know, everyone came in and, you know, was going about their business, but it was a lot of fun in spring training. And I could just tell there was a presence about this team. It wasn't, you know, like we've been bad in years past, and there wasn't a lot of pressure on a lot of guys, but you could just tell that they were relaxed and ready to turn things around.
Tell us about Torrey's leadership. And you mentioned the veteran leadership, and clearly that's who we're talking about here, at least at the top of the list.
Yeah, there's plenty of other guys. Torrey's unbelievable. I can't even say enough about him right now, but it's just the presence he rings day in and day out, and just even after a loss, it's just, hey, we'll go get him tomorrow. And he's been around so long and seen so many players come and go, and then his ups and downs too. So he's a great wealth of knowledge to go to if you have any questions. But he's the one been, you know, driving the ship really.
And there's a new pitching coach here in Neil Allen, and the bullpen guy Eddie Guardado, who's got that Torrey kind of persona. So those guys have had a big stamp on this team, haven't they?
Yes, and it was kind of nice knowing Neil was coming into a new organization also and getting to work with him, and then also Eddie. Eddie's been a big help to me also, and it's just, you know, we're all on board with them, and we all take everything they say to heart, and they've been also a great help to this team.
You knew coming in to spring training you had to fight and battle to make this club. Tell us how that went, how your thought process was, and when you figured that you were going to be part of it, what that meant to you.
I've been fighting my whole life, so ever since birth, you know, I was 3 months premature, 2 pounds, so it's just kind of in my nature. So fighting wasn't ever an issue. I know once I got into camp, I told a couple people, you know, I'm not going back. I'm not going back to the Braves. I'm going to make this team. And I just had a lot of fun out there in spring. It was going out there and pitching, and I was having a lot of fun. And then the day Paul told me I was making the team, it was a very emotional day, the realization of the dream. You know, I called my mom and dad right away, but to go through what I went through in camp was you know, couldn't have gone any better for me. And, you know, I was really excited to make the team and very thankful. A guy like Paul was the one to tell me I made it.
And tell us about the role that Paul etched out to you. Said, hey, this is what you're going to be doing. Obviously, middle relief, but, you know, how did you accept it and what have the conversations been about your role?
There hasn't really been a lot of conversation about that. You know, right when the get go, he goes, we'd be ready when your name's called. And I told him, you know, when that phone rings, I'll expect my name to be called and I'll be ready to pitch once that bell rings.
J.R. Graham, Twins pitcher, our guest this week, and you're in that middle relief role. You're a bridge guy from starter, hopefully maybe to another bridge guy or closer, but I think collectively you middle guys have to know that if you can get it in Glenn's hands, you're in good hands.
Yeah, we're feeling very confident with everyone rolling. We're rolling out there, so we're just trying to get the ball and do our job once we go out there. You know, we want to get as many guys out as possible until they take the ball from us, and we've all been doing that very well.
I know Terry Ryan at the beginning of the season, he told me, he said that one of the things that needed to happen this year was middle relief needed to be strong. Obviously, they went out and got, made some move, got Santana and brought some people in to try and round up the starting rotation, but the middle relief was a question mark. It doesn't seem to be as big a question mark as it was at the start.
Yeah, I guess that was something they were going to get, and I guess they weren't too worried about it in spring. So, you know, they rolled with it. They had an idea, and they saw the players they liked, and they put the best players on the field.
Well, and then you look at the Kansas City Royals a year ago. I mean, their run to the World Series, that bullpen got a lot of the accolades.
Mm-hmm. That was a very strong bullpen, and coming from Atlanta, that was another heavy bullpen that, you know, I've kind of got to get to know and know that kind of process of what they've done. So, you know, the bullpen is a big part of it, but it all starts with the starting pitcher. You know, we've had some strong starting pitchers in this team. The defense, all around, we've all been clicking. There hasn't been one standout. We've all been contributing as a team, which is very nice.
Pitcher's Park, Target Field, do you like pitching in this park?
I love pitching in this park. I wouldn't consider it a pitcher's park, but it's a beautiful stadium, and I enjoy pitching here.
You're a no-cal guy. Does Raiders, Niners, Giants, A's, Golden State Warriors,
Golden
Sharks?
State Warriors. Yeah, go Warriors.
He's a Cavs guy, so watch out.
Sorry about that. You know, it was,
easy now.
No, it was growing up, it was always Oakland and San Francisco for me. When I grew up a little bit around 10, 12, I started liking the A's a little bit more. Eric Burns, Miguel Tejada. All those guys is funny because I've actually watched Torrey and Eddie play when I was growing up in like I think 2000 and 2002.
You told them that.
I have. I make Torrey feel real old sometimes. But no, I watched him knock out the A's in the playoffs. So, The Moneyball years. Yeah. So I was really excited when that movie came out. But, I lived it. I watched it. I went to a lot of A's games. So that was kind of my team.
Well, and I think you weren't here for the previous 4 years when it really was a nightmare, but you've heard about it. You know about it. If you can get this thing back on track and get the Twins somewhere near the playoffs, then you're going to be part of something special, something that Torrey used to be part of yearly.
Yeah, it's I don't care about what happened 3-4 years ago. It's all about right now, and we're rolling, and, you know, let's try to do something special here.
All right, JR, thanks.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Joining us now, Danny Santana. You had a breakout rookie season a year ago, exciting people with your play in center field, a little bit at shortstop, but overall as a team, because you're going to get it going eventually, and the team's already winning, that has to make you feel good to know that, hey, this could only get better.
You know, it's a little difficult because I a slow start. Now I feel a little more better on home plate. My defense is a lot better than last year. You know, I not play shortstop last year. I play a little more in the outfield. The thing that made me happy, good, is to play hard for the team, help the team. Right now I start to help the team, you know, a couple weeks ago. I be like struggling, you know. Now I feel better. I feel like I help the team right now.
When you aren't in the lineup, do you sit and do you look out there and try to learn and soak it up as much as you can when you're not playing?
When I don't play, I try to look, you know, the place they make when I be out. I try to learn because that helped me a lot when I don't play. Watch the game.
Do you enjoy playing for Paul Molitor? He seems to be the kind of guy that players can relate to.
I feel comfortable playing with Molly. You know, every time I play hard, make some good plays, sometimes errors, sometimes not hit good. He tried to make me, you know, stronger in the game.
And does he talk to you when you're not in there? He says, hey, you're not in the lineup today. This is what I need you to do. Does he talk to you when you're not in there?
Sometimes he talked to me, you know. He tried to hurt me because young guys think a lot. in the game.
All right, Danny Santana, our guest of the Twins. Are you comfortable now here in Minnesota, the Twin Cities? The ball club certainly is comfortable at home. They have the best home record in the American League, 17-6. Are you comfortable in these parts as far as your life?
I feel better. I love comfortable here, and I like this park, this city, everything.
And this is how is this different from last year? What's the biggest difference, do you think?
It's nothing different. It's all the same.
But you, I know you expect to get that average back up, you know, near 300 and have the kind of year we saw last season.
You know, I don't want 300. I want 280, 270 is my average right there.
Well, fair enough. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Danny Santana, the Twins here on Minnesota Score Radio, your Twins ticket.
The Twin Cities home for Minnesota Score Radio is Sports Radio 105, the ticket. Now back to Wally and Eric.
And we're back, Minnesota Score Radio, your Twins ticket. Our thanks to Rocky for lining up Danny Santana, who's been scuffling a bit, and hopefully he will get things back on track. And J.R. Graham, very likable young man from Northern California. Just happy to be on the club. It's always good to run into guys like that. You can tell that when J.R. Graham picks up the paycheck, he's very grateful.
Yeah, he is. And for Santana, I liked how honest he was about his game. And, you know, I'm struggling. I need to be better. You know, those type of things coming out of a young guy. At least he's understanding. But he also, you know, he also gives a lot of, you know, credibility, here we go again, to Torrey in helping him, you know, stay focused and not let that drag your whole game down and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it was kind of interesting to hear from two different, completely different types of players in different situations. Santana is going to be, you know, they want him to be their future shortstop. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think Molitor made the decision at the beginning of the year, you're our shortstop. And we're going to move Escobar around, get his bat in the lineup whenever we can. But you're our shortstop this year. No more center field. And, you know, he made that decision by and then sent Hicks down and put Schaefer and Shane Robinson out there. You know, those two can hold the fort until either Hicks proves himself and or Buxton comes up. But right now, this is the way we're going to do it. And I, you know, and with Santana struggling in the early part of this season at the plate, he just goes to Escobar at shortstop. And I don't think he feels like he loses anything.
No.
Not offensively, anyway.
Suddenly, it looks like the Twins really are a deep organization because, again, Santana hasn't been near what he was a year ago. He was the bright spot.
Leadoff guy, too.
In that bleak season a year ago. And so he's not, you know, on track yet. Oswaldo Arcia has been injured. They certainly haven't gotten a whole lot out of him. Kenneth Vargas is at Triple A Rochester, and you know he's gonna at some point be able to come back up and hopefully contribute.
Yep.
And Alex Meyer, they made an interesting move on Meyer a few days ago. He's the guy in the Denard Span trade that they, you know, again, that's a bad trade. I mean, Denard Span is a huge part of the Washington Nationals, and Meyer was supposed to be a guy who they wanted him to be part of that five-man rotation.
Yep.
Coming out of camp in Florida. He didn't make the team, and he's struggled as a starter at AAA Rochester, so he goes into the bullpen. And I have a feeling they're starting to think, you know what, he may not be cut out to be, you know, on the bump, starting a game, giving you seven innings or more. He might be a guy, hey, let's hand him the ball maybe in the middle of things or even a closer role down the road. Let him come in and see if he can get three or four outs and just use a power arm. We saw it many years ago with Dennis Eckersley. You know, as a starter, he wasn't bad, but as a closer, he's as good as we've ever seen just about. So maybe that's what's in the future for Alex Meyer.
John Smoltz. Now,
yes.
Smoltz, I think Smoltz, it was a good move for Smoltz. He was an effective starter. He was not a marginal starter.
Right.
Eckersley was okay as a starter. Smoltz was a good starter, but he was a great closer. And maybe you're right. Heck, let's look at our own closer. Glenn Perkins came up as a starter for the Minnesota Twins and eventually morphed into a middle reliever, and then he was the setup guy, and now he's your closer.
And now a rare left-hand closer.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see a lot of those. So, yeah, I think, again, you know, sometimes you know, right now with Alex Meyer, it's a bag of lemons, unfortunately. Can you make lemonade out of it? I mean, the kid presses. I mean, the Twins have all but said he presses too hard. So maybe they can. Maybe he's not fit to be a starter. Hey, look, bullpen guys and closers are really just as valuable as your starters anymore.
Well, and you need
to have them.
And you need less pitches. You know, if Alex Myers, if it's his fastball that he is just leaning on constantly, then he can come in and be a closer for an inning or two, or, you know, or be a middle relief guy and get away with it. But if you're a starter, you better have more than one or two pitches. You're going to have to mix it up. And I think that, you know, if his fastball is clocking in the 90s consistently and they feel like maybe that's the way he should go, then maybe this will turn him around and make him a valuable asset at some point.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. And again, so a lot going on down there in the minor leagues as well. But as far as the you know, the Twins right now, the here and the now, they've got Toronto in this weekend, 3-game series.
They hit the road next week, correct?
They do. And, you know, the other thing, and I know I touched on it briefly in the beginning of the show, but and this to me is another recipe for having a good season. They're dominant at home right now. They're 17-6. That's the best record in the American League. So we haven't seen that at Trendy Target Field since year one.
Trendy Target Field. But by the way, if you do get in the doors, it becomes Spendy Target
Field. Yeah, you're right. You're right. A little bit more expensive than our second favorite venue in town, CHS Field, over in the capital city of St. Paul.
You and I both were experienced at opening weekend, Memorial Weekend. I went on Friday night, and you were there both Thursday and Saturday, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
I purposefully avoided you.
Yeah, I noticed. I noticed. Well, I spent some time on Leech Lake, so. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. The venue is great. The setting is great. I think that, you know, they still have all the bells and whistles and buzzers and, you know, all the nonsense that goes on in between innings. And
I like their PA guy, their public address guy.
Yeah.
He grows on me. He's a little cocky.
A little edgy.
A little edgy, but you know what? It works. They are. They have taken this quirkiness thing to another level, and now they have this playpen that is, it's really a minor league Taj Mahal. I kept doing a double take. By the way, I love their uniforms. Looks just like the LA Dodgers, because St. Paul for a long time was the AAA team for the Brooklyn and then LA Dodgers. And so they got the red number even. It's like being at Chavez Ravine without the freeways.
Well, now, Friday night they were wearing the cream colored with the... Okay. Were they wearing the whites when you were there?
I saw the whites on Thursday and Saturday. So the Dodger blue look.
Yeah. You know, Friday night they were wearing
the cream. So they mix it up then. Okay.
Friday night they were wearing the cream color. My wife even mentioned, Don mentioned, she said, I'm not sure I like that color.
Well, you got to get her out there when they have the Dodger replica look. You know, which is the blue lettering, blue numbers on the back, and then that little red number on the
front.
Believe
me, my wife knows fashion. Don knows fashion.
That's a pretty good look, the Dodger uniform, in my opinion.
I like it. I like it.
Clean.
But I agree, as far as fan experience, we took the train in. We picked it up. We picked up the light rail in, you know, kind of the midway area and took it in. It takes you within, about a block or so. It's, you know, an easy, less than 2-minute walk to the stadium from there. Fun atmosphere inside, plenty of place to stand and watch if you want to, and, you know, and plenty of open seats eventually to, you know, not everybody's going to be sitting there. I'll give you my one complaint, though. Those concession stand lines are long. I mean, they are long. They're going to have to figure that out, because there is just, nobody wants to stand in the concession stand.
Attention,
line.
Mike Vec.
Yeah.
Well, there's always glitches, especially when you open up a new
venue. And it's early on, and I get that.
Venue.
And then the other thing was getting out. They need to open up more gates to get out of the place.
It's there's only one gate you can exit
from
third base line. I noticed that, too. And
It's dreadful. I mean, you're standing shoulder to shoulder waiting to get out of the place and saying, come on. Those are a couple of the things I think that they're going to have to work on. But the overall experience is grade A.
Yeah, I like the energy and the vibe. I'll say the other thing I really love, and they have it down at Fort Myers at the new Twins, you know, renovated CenturyLink Sports Complex, Hammond Field, and then Kansas City, Kauffman Stadium, since the renovation. And that's the boardwalk, where you can circle the entire stadium, the perimeter, and stop at any point and still look at the game. I mean, and I did that both nights I was there. Go down the third baseline, stop, take a look. Go into the left field, grassy knoll area, stop, take a look. Right field, where you've got some fabulous skyline views of St. Paul. That's a new thing you're seeing now. You'll go to Kansas City, I'm sure, sometime. You can do that at Kansas City, and I think that's awesome. Stand right by the waterfalls and the big crown scoreboard, and then the spring training for the Twins has that. And that, to me, is a game changer. So give the Saints credit on that. The Twins don't even have that.
No, I enjoyed the experience, though. I would say the one thing I would say, be careful of those prices. It is low Class A baseball, and they're, you know, I think I saw online it's like $13 for a general admission or a reserved seat, something like that. That's about what you're paying at a Twins game.
So yeah,
I'd be careful with that.
That may flush itself out. I think they'll have a novelty for a while, but we'll see.
They're probably they're probably playing the field right now because they know that they're going to fill the stadium. You know, they might as well get as much out of it as they can. And eventually, the prices are going to have to come down.
It's been geographically enlightening for me, though. I got to be blunt. When it comes to St. Paul, I certainly know the X, where the Wild play, you know, Union Station a little bit. But other than that, I didn't know where Lower Town was. Didn't really know it existed. You've heard about the farmer's market there. Now I know it does exist.
Yeah, that would be a whole block from Union Station, by the way. So you never looked.
Yeah, I never bothered to think about Lower Town.
What is your deal?
And now I've found creative ways to exit and get out without having to get on I-94. I can get on I-35E, and so it's educated me.
You're learning. All right. We need to take a break. When we come back, Al Moss joins us with our weekly fishing report. The Hall of Fame fisherman is up on deck next here on Minnesota Score Radio, your St. Paul Saints ticket.
From the land of sky blue waters, you're listening to Minnesota Score Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Welcome back, Minnesota Score Radio. Time now for our Leech Lake fishing report, and we head up to Leech Lake with Hall of Fame fisherman Al Moss. Al, we spent some time on the lake last week, and we were able to catch some fish. How's the fishing been overall this past week?
It's been, you know, it's very, very good. The whole thing right now, Wally, is going strong. And as you know, we have two tournaments. We had a bass tournament on the opening day out here, and we have the classic tournament coming up here in this weekend. So we had two of them going, everybody pre-fishing. There were thousands of people here.
Huh.
And I think right now there's more people than that in the area, Wally. So things are going good. The bite is good. I fished with my wife yesterday for 2 hours. We caught 14 walleyes with no trouble at all. Average, we kept 17 to 19 and a half. And beautiful fish, perch, northerns galore, and walleye bite. It's going to be a very interesting tournament because I think everybody is going to catch some fish. And we'll probably have a record catch.
You caught those 12 walleye in such a short period of time. What were you using?
Jigging a minnow, and
wow.
It didn't make a whole lot of difference whether it was a lake shiner or whether it was a rainbow. We just happened to work into the heavy, dense cabbage weed. Everybody's working around on the points and everything, but my records indicate go back into the weeds. So I went into 9 to 10 foot. We put on green jigs, which is a key. And we pitched the jigs and then worked them back to the boat slowly. We caught probably, 15 to 20, probably lost another 20 in a 2.5 hour period. And very, very nice walleyes. Not many people around us, but I did see as many as 45 boats on a point or out on a flat. So
yes.
Everybody's here. The Cabela's pros are here because they're starting to pre-fish and take a look at it, too. So,
all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll check back with Al to see where you should be fishing this weekend on Leech Lake. Stay with us. Attention fishermen. Sugar Point Resort is fishing central on legendary Leech Lake. Sugar Point has a large protected harbor offering full gas and bait services with a wide choice of rental boat and motor combinations or a slip for your own boat. Sugar Point is also a great place for your family vacation with 1, 2, or 3 bedroom fully furnished modern cabins with beautiful lake views. And they also have complete campground facilities at Sugar Point. Sugar Point is a great place for kids with 2 playground areas, paddle boats, basketball, volleyball, and an enclosed heated pool. So what are you waiting for? This summer, make it a trip to remember at Sugar Point Resort on Leech Lake. Visit them online at sugarpoint.com.
For a memorable experience this year with some of the best fishing you'll find anywhere, make plans for Agency Bay Lodge on beautiful Leech Lake. Agency Bay Lodge is uniquely located on a peninsula that juts out in the center of Leech Lake, where you'll have easy, quick access to the best fishing spots on the lake. The staff at Agency Bay Lodge will help you locate where the fish are biting. Their full-service dock offers fueling, bait, and modern, fully equipped boat rentals. Come and stay in their comfortable lakeside log cabins, or if you're not fishing, stop and enjoy a pizza, sandwich, or a beverage at their lakefront bar. For the best fishing and a great vacation, remember Agency Bay Lodge on Leech Lake. For more information, visit them at www.agencybaylodge.com.
We continue along on the Leech Lake Fishing Report with Al Moss. All right, Al, where should we be going if we want to catch walleye this weekend on Leech?
Well, I would say that with the tournament that's going, and I will be out there with Midwest Outdoors, and we will be doing the interviewing and checking all over the lake. I would say that the entire lake is going to produce fish, Wally. But to get those four key fish before you have to go for your big one. You got to have one over 26 in order to place in this sucker. They're going to have to go into, I think, into the weeds or into the areas where the water wind is pounding. I think the Two Points area, Portage Bay, is going to be extremely good. Sucker Bay is going to be very, very good. If they're looking for the great big fish, I know in previous experience, we're going to see people in Cabacona Bay, Walker Bay, on those deep drops, and that will be their last fish to go for. But I think everybody's going to catch fish. You will see them fishing everything. Their bite is now starting really well on jigging a leech or rigging a leech. I haven't heard much on crawlers yet, but the jig and the shiner is still deadly. Lots of calls this week for red tails and creek chubs, but they're hard to come by, very, very costly. So I would say that's going to be what you're going to look for. On the western basin will give you the fish that you can keep. The other side is going to have a lot of big fish. Now the whole key is you're going to have four fish at 19 and a half and then a big fish each day to be able to hang into this thing. I want to mention that bass tournament, too, to you, Wally, last weekend. I don't know how many boats they had totally. The interesting thing is the top six were all smallmouth and they were very large. The biggest fish, 6.5 pounds.
Wow.
We did not have smallmouths before. Believe me, leeches exploding with smallmouth. So very interesting developments taking place.
Yeah. Well, good stuff as usual, Al, and good luck with the tournament. We'll check in with you next week to see how the tournament turned out. And I know proceeds from this tournament goes towards the Children's Fund, so it's a great deal there.
Yeah, it's a great deal, and people love it, and it's a fun tournament.
All right, Al, talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Take care, Wally.
Al Moss with our Leech Lake Fishing Report. Eric and I will be back with our final segment here on Minnesota Score Radio right after this timeout. Stay with us.
Back to Minnesota Score Radio with Wally Langfellow and Eric Nelson on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
And we're back to wrap it up. Minnesota Score Radio, your purple ticket, Minnesota Vikings OTAs this week. We won't get too much into that. I know you're not into that. I'm really not into OTAs either, to be blunt. But a former Viking was in town recently, Randy Moss.
I heard.
At Ridgedale, signing autographs, $84 a pop, and it went to Tyrone Carter's football camp down in Red Wing last weekend. But Randy Moss, still really, I think, an incredibly popular athlete in Minnesota, despite some of his shortcomings.
Antics.
Yes, and a lot of good things, too, let me add. He's got a big heart. Everybody says a big heart, but he's popular.
Well, I understand that part of his trip into Minnesota was to visit
Pelican Rapids, a graduation
up at Pelican Rapids.
That's
a
wonderful story. He met the young kid at the time in Mankato. She has leukemia.
Yep.
And he told her, this is many years ago, hey, when you graduate, I'll be there.
And he
delivered.
Up. And this is, 14 years later?
Yeah. So he goes up to Pelican Rapids. That's extreme northwestern Minnesota, right?
Yep.
He shows up. So you can imagine, first of all, the buzz that once they found out Randy Moss is there. But to deliver on that for that girl, that was very cool. That's the side of Randy Moss that so many of his friends, somebody like a Tyrone Carter, will tell you, hey, that's Randy. He's got a big heart.
That's a great story. Another story popped up this week. Did you know? Well, you probably know this, but your Swarm are leaving town.
Yeah. Wow.
And for those of you who are not into the Swarm or don't know what they are, it's indoor lacrosse.
The buzz is gone.
And the buzz is the high. It will not be the Hive any longer. The X will not be. But I find it interesting because the popularity of the outdoor game at the high school level and the youth level is exploding. And it's costing us baseball players, oh, by the way. It's just an unbelievable. It's an exploding sport.
Yeah.
I don't know what more to say about it. I'm not a lacrosse guy, and my kids haven't been or aren't, and their friends generally aren't. Although, we've lost some pretty good athletes to that sport, out of baseball and into lacrosse. But apparently it did not translate into a winning formula for the indoor lacrosse team that played at the X. I think their lease probably had more to do with it than anything. I think they had a steady crowd. I think that they kind of plateaued, and I don't think that they were making money. So they're moving someplace yet to be announced.
Yeah, and I've had a few friends who have gone and seen them play. I went once many years ago, and I've had people tell me they loved it.
You know,
it's physical. It's got a lot of action. It's fast-paced.
Big sport in Canada. I mean, a lot of
huge
Canadian players.
Canada, upstate New York,
yes.
Northeast, that's no doubt about it. And that's indoor box lacrosse. It's tough to get people to go into an arena in the Twin Cities spring and summer and fall. I would say this, since we are the sports capital, maybe of the U.S. I mean, we have so many teams, so many leagues, and that sports pie is sliced up into a lot of itsy-bitsy tiny pieces, that eventually something's got to give. And I'm not surprised by this. I'm not gloating about it. Hey, you know, I hate to see this happen because I'm sure some people are disappointed. I have nothing against lacrosse. But probably they're much better served being in a place maybe like Des Moines or Sioux Falls.
Where they're the they're the only game
exactly.
in town.
Exactly. You want to be able to command more of the media market and, you know, just get more attention. It's tough to get attention in this market. Just ask the Minnesota Lynx, who have done everything right. They have a galaxy of stars. They're well coached. They've won titles. And they get some attention. But I'll guarantee you they don't think they get enough. And it's probably a valid complaint on their end. As good as they are.
Yeah, no, you're right. Two WNBA titles.
4 years.
Player of the year, Maya Moore. I mean, they just...
Local legend, Lindsey Whalen.
Yeah, they have everything going for them. And they don't get the huge crowds or do they get the huge attention from the media. Now, they have a very good following. People who love to go and watch them, they're there. They're ardent fans, but... It's not a huge crowd. It's just a very supportive group.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, what they're up against is they're up against the Twins,
yep.
and then eventually the Vikings, and all the other stuff going on in this market. I think Minnesota United, the soccer team, MinU, is realizing that. There was definitely a buzz a month or so ago with the MLS announcement.
Right.
That now is kind of, you know, the air's out of that balloon a little bit because nobody really knows if it's going to happen with the stadium situation in flux. And so I think MinU is trying to let people know, because I get the emails, I'm sure you do,
yep.
hey, come on out, we have media day, and they're trying to market themselves too and get a chunk of the attention. And I want to see it succeed here. I just sometimes I think this is a market of what, 3.5 million in the greater Twin Cities? I mean, all the sports we have, again, I really think we are the sports capital of the U.S. You can talk about New York City or L.A. or Chicago, but they don't have college hockey like we do. And L.A. doesn't even have the NFL.
Well, per capita, we definitely are.
Per capita, no question. If you compare us to, say, a Phoenix or a Seattle, we have a lot more sports on our plate than they do. And that's about a similar size market.
NBA Finals are set. You're going to watch? You're going to watch LeBron tear up the Warriors?
Congratulations to you. Your club is 4 wins away from ending that almost 51-year drought of no championships in Z-Town.
Thanks for reminding me of that.
I know you're going to hear about that a lot, and then you're going to hear about Golden State being 40 years out without winning a title for the NBA. But they've had some other championships in other sports in San Francisco and Oakland, so they're not quite as title-starved in that part of the region or the world as you are. But I think the NBA has to be happy. First of all, some new blood, but you got marketable guys. I mean, Steph Curry,
no, he's MVP,
incredible. I mean, this is one of the great three ball guys I've ever seen, and he's got character.
Did you see him go down that big flip in game four? I mean, he went, how high in the air did he go and then come down, and he still came back into the game and almost led him to victory. I mean, if it wasn't James Harden making everything in sight that night, they would have ended it in four. They end up winning it in five. It's incredible. I mean, he is the real deal and then some. And like you say, LeBron and Curry. And let me say this about Kevin Love. Is he out there? He's on a milk carton. I do not see this guy in his street clothes sitting on the bench. Maybe I'm missing it. Maybe they're just not showing him. But I've watched the majority of the Cavalier games here in the playoffs. I think I saw him once since he got hurt. I do not believe I have seen him. I see Varejao all the time. He's there. He's easy to see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's there and they're not showing him. But you know what? They don't need Kevin Love. They're pretty good without Kevin Love right now.
Yes, they don't even need Kyrie Irving, who's been hobbled with tendonitis.
So they just show you how good LeBron
is. Well, you know, I remember when I was a kid, Sports Illustrated had a cover of Reggie Jackson, and the headline was Super Duper Star. And to me, that's what LeBron James is.
Yeah.
Super Duper Star. Can you put a team on your back? We saw Reggie do it back in the day, Yankees, 3 straight home runs against the Dodgers. He could win a championship by himself. I think LeBron James is that kind of an athlete. There aren't too many of them. Jordan, Gretzky, you know, pick a few, maybe Tom Brady. But point is, he's a super duper star. And Love's been gone. Kyrie Irving banged up, and he just has willed this team into the finals. And, you know, I think for LeBron, look, he's got two rings, five straight trips down to the NBA finals. But this has got to be personal for him because he's a Cleveland slash Akron guy. He can personally end this epic championship drought. And how sweet would that be for him, especially since he was a villain just a few years ago? You took your poster down of him. I'm so ashamed of you. Now you have it back up. Goodness.
My vanity license plates were gone. Everything went out the window.
You just said goodbye. Go to Miami.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We need to wrap things up. A reminder, visit our website. It's minnesotascore.com, home to the Minnesota Score magazine. No, LeBron James will not be on the cover of the next issue of the Minnesota Score, but you can subscribe right online, just $19.95 for 1 year of the Score.
All right, fair enough. We'll FedEx out those thank yous. One goes to Al Moss, also one to J.R. Graham, Danny Santana, and to Rocky. For Wally Langfellow, I'm Eric Nelson saying so long. We are Minnesota Score Radio, your Cavaliers and the epic drought ticket.